Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit the webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the milk of human kindness is not pasteurized, right after this. The genocidal policy of Global 2000 and the New World Order are the greatest threats to our lives, our liberties, and our property since Noah's flood. And that's not just my opinion. Jesus of Nazareth held the same view. Here's what he said in Matthew 24, verse 22. He said, quote, "Except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved alive." Now, there are 64 life-threatening problems described in Scripture detailing this New World Order and their Global 2000 genocide plan. The Scripture teaches preparation for this great tribulation, not apathy and indifference. That's why I contend that it's time that you and I wise up and start listening more to the God of Israel and stop following after all these crazy scientists, these philosophers, preachers, and politicians like Ted Kennedy and Arlen Specter and that guy Hillary or that guy John in the Justice Department. Let's prepare to live through and survive this Global 2000 New World Order nightmare. To do just that, why don't you call, write, or email the law school and ask for these 64 life-threatening problems from the Scripture. Just call and order the free General Law CD package. That's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge. Now, the number to call, 417-273-4967. And you can also order over the web. Just go to the webpage georgegordon.org, click onto the email machine, and send an email request for that free General Law CD package. Remember, georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, last time we were talking about the book entitled The Milk of Human Kindness is Not Pasteurized, written by William Campbell Douglas. I don't think very many of these books have been published. I doubt if there's a million. He had in mind that he'd like to have a million of them put into circulation. You can probably order a copy from Last Laugh Publishers, 2550 Windy Hill Road, Suite 315, Marietta, Georgia, 30067. Again, that's Last Laugh Publishers, 2550 Windy Hill Road, Suite 315, Marietta, Georgia, 30067. Now, the book was published in 1985. That address may not be any good, I can't tell you. It's also put out by Copple House Books Incorporated. Lakemont, Georgia might have a better chance there. Copple House Books Incorporated, C-O-P-P-L-E. Lakemont, Georgia, 30552. And I've always had good response or good results when going to a used bookstore. Just have them type in, "The Milk of Human Kindness is Not Pasteurized," William Campbell Douglas, and see what they come up with. Well, in the old days, doctors and scientists had a clear understanding of the milk problem. It's not that way any longer. It's peculiar how these old truths have to be rediscovered. But back in 1926, an ordinance was proposed in Missouri that would have prohibited the sale of raw milk. And the judge in that case had this to say, quote, "A great volume of evidence was offered regarding the relative qualities of raw milk and pasteurized milk. A large number of practicing physicians, chemists, bacteriologists, and users of milk were sworn. The evidence conclusively shows that pasteurization altered the character of the milk, and the testimony of far the greater number of the physicians and bacteriologists who testified was that pasteurization impairs its quality, that it destroys some of the vitamins in the milk and impairs others, that it destroys the lactic acid which causes milk to sour, that souring is a process of self-preservation, and lactic acid is an important element in counteracting pernicious bacteria. The pasteurization disintegrates the salts such as calcium, iron, and phosphates, causes them to lose their organic quality, and makes them more difficult, if not impossible, to assimilate. The pasteurization caused constipation and indigestion, particularly among babies and children, that it breaks down the enzymes, though other physicians said there was sufficient of that element in the digestive organisms of persons who drink milk. And it was shown that doctors generally require raw milk for ailing babies and children. The children who could not flourish on pasteurized milk usually improved in health and flourished on raw milk. There was other evidence to show that one reason for the satisfactory healthfulness of raw milk is that it increases the vitality and the resistance of a child because it's easier to assimilate, and the destruction of pathogenic germs by pasteurization was more than counterbalanced by the superior quality of raw milk. In addition to the professional evidence offered, the relators offered the testimony of a number of mothers and other raisers of children, and they uniformly testified that children who were not healthful when fed on pasteurized milk were healthful when fed raw milk. The respondents made no attempt to counteract that testimony, but countenance it was unimportant coming from non-professional sources, but it was the opinion of several physicians that actual experience, particularly clinical experience, was more valuable than laboratory tests in determining the effects of milk upon the system, unquote. So the court decided that the ordinance prohibiting the sale of raw milk was in conflict with the law and should be invalidated. A letter written to the Journal of the American Veterinarian Medical Association by Dr. Edward T. Henry, DVM, contained the usual arguments that pasteurized, homogenized milk is as nutritious as fresh milk. And Dr. Henry says, quote, "Let me say to rest the myth that pasteurization lowers the nutrition of milk. True, several enzymes and maybe a vitamin or two are destroyed. But one should not be relying totally on milk for these constituents. Pasteurization has very little, if any, effect on the nutritional value of dairy products." Dr. Henry raises the specter in his letter of the host of diseases that one may contract if one drinks raw certified milk. And he states, quote, "The consuming public can be guaranteed that the milk that they're purchasing, if pasteurized, is free of disease-causing microorganisms such as brucellosis, tuberculosis, pastatyphoid fever, typhoid fever, salmonellas, and Q fever, just to name a few. And some of these diseases, such as Q fever and brucellosis, never did come from contaminated milk. Q fever is an airborne virus contracted through the respiratory system." But anyway, when consuming raw milk, he continued, "Who can be absolutely sure that it's free of the foregoing microorganisms? These are diseases that can kill, and some people want to allow use of raw milk, and in the name of freedom of choice, even with all of the testing of both cows and milk, people who drink raw milk are exposing themselves to potential life-threatening diseases." Well, let me pause here for a moment. Let's take a look at this thing of freedom of choice. Do you have today in 2005... Think of it. Now, here's the 21st century, 2005. Do you have the freedom of choice to choose pasteurized milk or raw milk? Well, in my state, the answer is no, you don't. And except for one or two states, California and Missouri, and I say my state, I can sell raw milk, but you can't buy it in the stores. You have to buy it from the producer. So, for practical purposes, I only know of one state in the Union, that's California, where you can buy. You have a choice. You can walk into a store and you can buy raw certified milk or you can buy pasteurized milk. The other 49 states don't have freedom of choice. Now, there was a time in America when we valued freedom of choice, and you could walk in and buy pasteurized or raw milk. Today, you can buy pasteurized milk or you can buy pasteurized milk or you can buy pasteurized milk. You have no choice. And yet, these people who were selling this pasteurization idea said, listen, all we can buy is raw milk, and we want choice. We want to be able to walk into a store and choose pasteurized or raw milk, and we want to choose the pasteurized milk. You know, I'm all for that. I think freedom of choice is more valuable than pasteurized or raw milk. That way I can choose and you can choose. And the marketplace makes that decision. But listen, the dairy industry and the dairy interests want pasteurized milk. And here's why. To produce raw milk, you have to produce clean milk or it won't keep and it spreads disease. The choice that had to be made wasn't, do we have pasteurized or unpasteurized milk? The question was, are we going to have raw milk or pasteurized milk? Are we going to have dirty milk or are we going to have pasteurized milk? That was the bottom line. And the dairy industry said, look, it's costly and it's difficult to produce clean milk. So let's produce dirty milk and pasteurize it so that these microorganisms will all be killed. And they did a great service. They just wiped out all of these infectious diseases. Like typhoid. Wiped it out. So if you don't want to get typhoid or infectious disease, you want pasteurized milk. Now, the side effects that come from that are nutritional deficiencies, which lead to degenerative diseases like cancer, heart attack, stroke, and muscular dystrophy, and a whole host and plethora of these degenerative diseases that we have now traded for the infectious diseases. Now, I'll just leave it to you. You can choose what you want. But I think choice is very important, and the choice has been taken away by the forces of the dairy interests and pasteurization. Now, this technique of pointing with horror at non-existent problems has undoubtedly discouraged many people from drinking unprocessed milk. The many years of consumption of raw certified milk by tens of thousands proves beyond a doubt that the terrible specter raised by Dr. Henry simply doesn't exist. It's a fiction. But the Council on Public Health and Regulatory Veterinary Medicine continued the myth by passing a resolution in 1979, condemning the use of raw milk on the basis that it was unsafe. Only pasteurized milk and milk products should be sold for human consumption. This resolution indicates the rampant ignorance and prejudice existing concerning the modern production of unprocessed milk. The ignorance and prejudice is not only present in the veterinarian's field, but is almost universally found in the field of human medicine. Now, back in the days of our Pilgrim fathers, tomatoes were considered poisonous. One iconoclastic gentleman ate a tomato in public to disprove the superstition. Everyone thought he was committing suicide. He survived the experiment, but it didn't change anybody's mind. Now, if he had been a woman, they would have burned him at the stake for witchcraft. But fortunately, it was man. The tomato story has its modern counterpart. Paul Virgin of Altadena Dairy drinks raw milk on television to prove that raw milk contains no evil spirits. In contrast, homogenized, pasteurized milk is an unhealthy product as shown by many tests. The avoidance of nutritious, safe, raw certified milk today because of previous disease conditions that no longer exist is as absurd as it would be not to eat tomatoes in the 20th century because they were considered to be poisonous in the 17th century. And it's surprising that pasteurization caught on, as most knowledgeable milk scientists at the time did all that they could to ferret out the pasteurizers who operated illegally and undercover. But the milk lobby eventually won, and they made the process respectable. In 1947, Michigan passed a compulsory pasteurization law, and the rest of the nation rapidly capitulated. Junk milk, by 1960, was compulsory in almost every state in the Union. And the reason that we have pasteurized milk is that it's promoted by the dairy processors because it lengthens the shelf life from 5 to 14 days. Now, that's the bottom line. It's money. It's money. Now, the dairy industry is committing suicide. Milk consumption is decreasing relative to the growth of population. Now, here's why milk consumption is decreasing. The false propaganda about cholesterol and fat causing hardening of the arteries, heart attacks, and strokes, promulgated by the news media with the blessing of organized medicine. That's number one. Number two, many people simply don't like the taste of heat-processed milk. One reason pasteurized milk doesn't taste like milk back on the farm is because of the practice of holding over milk. The milk is placed in large raw milk silos until ready for processing. It may stay there for days. This favors the growth of bacteria called psychotrophics, and these bacteria grow very nicely at the refrigeration temperatures of the silos used for the storage. The psychotrophics, let's see if I can pronounce that now, the psychotrophics, I think is the way that's pronounced, produce enzymes that are extremely heat resistant and easily survive the pasteurization process. That's why your pasteurized milk may taste bitter, unclean, oily, chalky, metallic, or medicinal. No wonder people have stopped drinking milk. It's an industrial product. Number three, the serious allergies that heat-processed milk has caused among children and adults alike. Pasteurized milk allergy, caused by altering the milk proteins through heating, has caused a major health problem here in the United States. And fourth, the growing realization among consumers that processed food, including pasteurized homogenized milk, is a health hazard. In this modern world, yesterday's crime, such as abortion, becomes today's essential service. Pasteurization was a crime at the turn of the century, and the pasteurizer had to lurk in the dark to kill milk. Although all of the sophisticated biochemical knowledge that we have today was not available to them, milk experts knew that heating milk, as in the pasteurization process, was changing a live food into a dead food and was simply a cop-out for the dairy farmer. It's much cheaper to make and produce dirty milk and then kill the bacteria by heating than it is to maintain a clean dairy with clean cows and produce clean milk. Now, on the following page, I'd like to show you the indication that since pasteurization of milk, infant mortality has steadily declined. In 1908, there were 75 infant deaths per thousand. In 1970, there were only 10. But if this graph is expanded, as in Figure 2, it is immediately obvious that pasteurization probably had very little to do with the drop in infant mortality. There had been a steady decline in infant mortality since the middle 1700s. The greatest contribution to the eradication of infectious disease was the automobile. The automobile has given us a lot of pollution, but it replaced a far worse pollution, and that is the horse. Now, it's hard for modern man to imagine how filthy the big cities were when everything in the city moved by horse and buggy, or horse and wagon. People rich and poor virtually waded through a sea of horse manure. With the manure came flies, billions of them, and with the flies came infectious diseases. The major cause of death until the mid-20th century was disease. Only the hardy survived, which is probably the main reason man eventually triumphed over infections. But the elimination of the horse from areas of high population density was a major factor. It's also interesting to note, returning to Figure 2, that the boxed-in area also represents the age of immunization and antibiotic therapy. The period of greatest usage of antibiotics has been from 1950 to the present. And as the graph illustrates, the rate of decline in infant mortality has been actually less since the advent of the miracle drugs. Dr. J. M. Prucha, professor emeritus in dairy bacteriology at the University of Illinois, said 40 years ago, there was much opposition to pasteurization of milk, and at best it was looked upon as a temporary expedient to obtain a safe milk supply until the time came when the dairy industry would learn to produce clean and safe milk. The propaganda that pasteurized milk is safer than fresh raw certified milk can be easily put to rest. In 1945, there were 450 cases of infectious disease caused by raw milk. There were 1,492 cases caused by pasteurized milk. Knowing that statistics don't lie and statisticians do, let's look at the figures from a different angle. There was one case of disease for every 12,400,000 quarts of pasteurized milk consumed, and one case of disease for every 18,900,000 quarts of raw milk consumed. In other words, you could drink 6,500,000 more quarts of raw milk than pasteurized milk without getting sick. I mean, that's where the numbers are. In 1945, there was an epidemic of food poisoning in Phoenix, Arizona. The official report reads, pasteurization charts show milk was properly pasteurized and leads to the assumption that toxin was produced in milk while it was stored without refrigeration and was not completely destroyed by the pasteurization process. 300 very sick people from, again, pasteurized milk. In Great Bend, Kansas, the same year, had 468 cases of gastroenteritis from pasteurized milk. This was traced to unsanitary conditions in dairies, unsterilized bottles, improper pasteurization. 9 people died. In June of 1982, over 172 people in a three-state area in the southeast were stricken with an intestinal infection. Over 100 required hospitalization. The infection, which caused severe diarrhea, fever, nausea, abdominal pain, and headache, was caused by, you guessed it, pasteurized milk. Now, does this happen today? Well, of course it does. But you see, doctors and parents are unlikely to blame milk because, after all, it's pasteurized. They will blame Junior's gastroenteritis and diarrhea on anything and everything but contaminated pasteurized milk. Now, the next time you have diarrhea, test your pasteurized milk. You can see Appendix 2 for the method. The same standard is supposed to apply to pasteurized milk, but who's checking? Now, the toxin from bacteria, largely responsible for diarrhea, the enterotoxin, is largely unaffected by pasteurization. And if raw milk is contaminated to a significant degree, you can tell it instantly from the smell and bad taste. But pasteurized milk may be seriously contaminated with no telltale odor at all. Remember, milk has a flavor enhancer to cover up that smell. Consumer Reports of January 1974 revealed how shoddy milk production is in the United States. Out of 125 samples of milk and milk products, 44% proved to be in violation of state regulations. So, Consumer Reports concluded, the quality of a number of dairy products in this study was little short of deplorable. Consumers Union reporting in June of 1982 stated that fecal bacteria called coliforms were found in many samples of milk tested. Some had counts as high as 2,200 organisms per cubic centimeter. Raw certified milk must contain no more than 10 coliforms per cubic centimeter. Now let's take a look at that for a second. Pasteurized milk can have 2,200 of these coliforms per cubic centimeter, but raw milk can only have 10. That's not 1,000. That's 10, period, per cubic centimeter. You see, raw milk has to be produced in clean sanitary conditions and kept clean. Pasteurized milk can be produced in dirty conditions, and then it can be processed. That's why it's called processed milk, by the way. It can be processed. We can centrifuge out those fecal matters. We can take the slime and the pus out in vacuum processing. There's ways to manufacture and process this milk. You know, it reminds me of taking crude oil and running it through a refinery, and you take out of it gasoline and propane and motor oil, and the heavier stuff settles to the bottom, and we call that grease. And we have a market for it. Milk is an industrial process that goes through the same kind of process. It's an industrial heating process. It'll separate the fats. It'll combine the fats. It'll take the fat out. It'll do whatever we want it to do to create a product. And then if the taste isn't good, we simply put in milk flavor enhancer and we just recreate the taste and the milk that we want. And after all, that's what we do with Kool-Aid. We just use artificial flavors. And then when people get used to these artificial flavors, it kind of reminds me when I was a kid after World War II. You see, fats were hard to come by. And butter was over $1 a pound. So someone came up with the idea that you could take vegetable fat. They called it Nuco. And it was white. Looked like lard. So what they'd do is they'd put a color enhancer in the package, and I remember my Aunt Dorothy, you know, she was modern. Now my granny, she wouldn't eat that crap if you'd have paid her, but she paid $1 a pound for butter, and we always had butter on our table. But my Aunt Dorothy, you know, she wanted to save money because you could buy this Nuco for 20 cents a pound. It was 1/5 the cost of butter. And she'd get in there with her fingers, and she'd get that coloring, and she'd goop that stuff up. Hell, she'd spend half an hour gooping this Nuco up, and then they'd put that on the table. Okay, well, I tried it, and then I put it on my bread, and you know what it tasted like? It tasted like Nuco. All these spreads that you put on, you see, people today are used to eating margarine and vegetable spread, and it can't be butter or whatever it is, and you get used to that taste. So my Aunt Dorothy and my Uncle Carol, they got used to this Nuco, and they swore by it. They said that Nuco is better than butter. Well, it's because they couldn't afford butter, because butter is the real thing. You know, butter costs money. You got to pay for what you get. And so the dairy industry over here has been cutting their own throat in reality through pasteurization because, as I mentioned yesterday, that the consumption of milk in the United States has dropped 1 percentage point a year since 1970. It's off 30%. People aren't drinking as much milk because they're lacto intolerant. And then, of course, you got the medical people out here telling you that milk is bad for you. And they're telling you the truth. Milk is bad for you, but not because God created an inferior product, but because we took that perfect food, milk, and we wrecked it. And we've wrecked it through pasteurization. Well, as we stated earlier and confirmed by consumer reports, the former objections to pasteurized milk are just as valid today. Pasteurization is an excuse for the sale of dirty milk. That's the bottom line. Sell dirty milk. Pasteurization may be used to mask low-quality milk, and pasteurization promotes carelessness and discourages the effort to produce clean milk. Now, I want to point out to you that I've got some cows, and I milk cows. I don't have a big dairy or anything. I just have 4 or 5 milk cows here. And I breed and sell family milk cows. But I worked in the dairy industry, you know, from the time I was 15 on till I was 23, so it was about 8 years. And I worked on a succession of dairies. I probably worked on, you know, 5 or 6 or 7 different dairies. I never worked on a dairy farm that we drank the milk out of the bulk tank, and I've never known a milk producer who would drink the milk out of his own bulk tank. Dairy people either, one, don't drink milk, two, they buy pasteurized milk, or three, they have their own cow that they milk separately from the herd. Now, that's the way dairymen are. Now, let's try this out. What if you were making a product and you told your customers out here, now, I wouldn't use my own product. Wouldn't that sound kind of stupid? Yes, I'm a dairyman and I produce milk, but I wouldn't drink my own milk because why? Well, because it's so damn dirty. It's dirty. Or the cows, you know, we feed these cows chemicals. We feed them bypass protein, or we give them BHTH, I believe it is, that milk enhancer from Monsanto. And one way or another, we have perverted, polluted, and wrecked and destroyed the milk supply. It was true at the turn of the century, 1900. Dirty milk killed people, and the solution was never clean up the milk. The solution was pasteurize that dirty milk. Let's manufacture that milk into a product like Nuco. And then let's sell that product out here in the marketplace. But let's not spend the money to clean up the milk supply. And that's because if you produce raw milk and it's full of bacteria, it won't keep 5 days. I've had milk here spoil in a day or two. You get a dirty pan, you know, just the cat dish. See, I don't wash the cat bowl, and I just pour the milk. I give my cats about a quart of milk out in the barn. And when you pour that milk into that dirty bowl, the next day it will be sour. In 24 hours, milk will sour because the bacteria doubles every 20 minutes. But you can take that same milk if it's clean at room temperature, and it'll keep for a day or two. If you keep it at 35 or 40 degrees, it'll keep 5 to 7 days. But no way is raw milk going to keep 14 days or 4 months. That's what that ultra-pasteurization, that's what irradiation is all about. That's what pasteurization is all about. It's shelf life. It's money, folks. It has nothing to do with health. It has nothing to do with cleanliness, etc. It has to do with money. Don't ever forget that. All right, I got to give you a reminder here. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events, and we do that 7 days a week. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management or staff of this network or of the local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, just go to the website georgegordon.org or call the law school direct 417-273-4967. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we're reviewing the book, The Milk of Human Kindness is Not Pasteurized, written by William Campbell Douglas. I'll give you some of the vital statistics. I think your best shot at getting a copy of the book is to go to a used bookstore. Just tell them, I want this book published in 1985, The Milk of Human Kindness is Not Pasteurized. William Campbell Douglas will be your best shot. But it was published by Copple House Books, Incorporated. That's spelled C-O-P-P-L-E, House Books, Incorporated. Lakemont, Georgia, 30552. And copyrighted 1985, William Campbell Douglas. Well, Professor Fosgate of the Dairy Science Department of the University of Georgia spoke out on pasteurization. He said, pasteurization has been preached as a 100% safeguard for milk, and that simply is not true. If milk gets contaminated today, the chances are that it will be after pasteurization. Pasteurized milk and raw milk are equally susceptible to contamination by pathogenic bacteria. Now, Fosgate is probably too conservative. You see, raw milk contains enzymes and antibodies destroyed by pasteurization that make it less susceptible to bacterial contamination. But Dr. Fosgate stands up for Rosebud and the rest of America's milk-producing ruminants. Quote, the dairy cow has been sadly maligned by the dairy and food industry in general. The dairy cow has been pictured as a veritable typhoid Mary for all of the ills of man, including the common cold, when actually the reverse is true. The full import of this statement will be brought out in the chapter on milk as a therapeutic agent in disease. Other than the greater infectious potential of pasteurized milk, are there other disadvantages to processed pasteurized milk? Enough to fill a few chapters. But before we go on to other disadvantages of pasteurized milk, let's look at an example of an amazing protective quality of raw milk, even when raw milk is dirty. Now, Jack Mathis, the president of Atlantis Mathis Dairy, was invited to inspect the dairy at the Atlantis City Prison Farm and make suggestions for modernization. He found the entire operation to be incredibly, indescribably, he said, filthy. It looked more like an outhouse than a milking parlor, was his first observation. The pathetic cows were in obvious pain, being milked by machines entirely unattended. Manure on the cow's hindquarters was running over the tits and milking apparatus and into the milk. From the milking machine, the milk ran into an open 10-gallon can by hose. You couldn't see the top of the can for the flies, Mathis said. It was like a beehive with flies walking in and out of the can. Jack Mathis assumed that the milk was not the prison, or for the prison, but for the farm's pigs. But it wasn't. It went directly to a cooler in the prison dining hall, complete with cow and fly manure and fly carcasses. It was simply strained through the cooler and then drunk by the prisoners. No one had gotten sick from the milk in 10 years. Now, what a case for raw milk. What a case for raw milk. Now, I produce milk here, and I produce it and drink it, and my family drinks it, and we've been drinking it for many years, but, you know, I try to keep my milk clean. I milk by hand. I don't even have milking machines. And I want to point that out because a lot of times, you know, people come here and they're just absolutely appalled. Oh, my God, you're milking that cow into an open bucket. Well, you know, for the last 4,000 or 5,000 years before mechanization, you know, people have been milking cows, and they've been milking cows by hand, you know. The nomads out in outer Mongolia milking horses, you know, milk them into open buckets. And into the open buckets, you're going to find hair off of the cow, and there may even be some feces, and there may even be some flies flying around, or a fly drop into the milk. And, you know, when people see that, they go, oh, my God! This is dirty milk. No, it's not the fly that causes the disease, or the hair, or the cow manure that causes the disease. What causes the disease is the bacteria that's in those contaminated products, like the bacteria on the flies, the bacteria. You know, just think of it this way. What if the fly didn't have any bacteria on it and it fell into the milk? What difference would it make? But, you know, flies are notoriously dirty. Now, let me describe filth for you. You go out here to one of these dairy feedlots where the cows, they don't go out in the pasture where the grass is clean, you know, and they can lay down on clean green grass. These cows actually live in their feces. The cow is on just bare dirt. And they bring the feed in a big wagon, and they feed it into a bunker. And the cow goes over and eats the feed out of the bunker, walks out into this bare dirt yard, and does it on the ground. Then she lays in it. Now, these are incredibly filthy conditions to be keeping cattle in. You know, out in the wild, out in normal woods, a deer lays down in the woods on leaves. The deer lays down in the pasture. They're not laying down in their feces. They're laying down in the grass where it's clean. You know, grass is clean. Leaves are pretty clean. And people don't seem to think that there's anything wrong with this industrialization of agriculture, where you keep cattle out here in these feedlots. Well, now the cattle are out in the feedlots, and the flies are out in the feedlots. Now, the reason that we produce dirty milk is because the cows are dirty in these dirty feedlots. You know, when my cows come in from the field, they're clean to start with. And if perchance they have manure on them, then we wash it off. You know, you take a wash rag and you take a bucket of water and you wash your bag. Now, you go into these modern dairy operations over here, and here are these dirty cows coming out of these dirty feedlots. Now, there's flies in abundance out here in these dirty feedlots, and these dirty feedlots harbor all these bacteria carried by the flies. Now, you get these flies running around, dropping into your milk, and they're dropping into the milk with this dirty bacteria on these dirty fly bodies. Now, that's all right, no problem, because we're going to pasteurize that milk. See, we're going to kill those bacteria. But the pasteurization doesn't kill all bacteria, boys and girls. Furthermore, this bacteria that's around on this dairy farm over here, can get into the milk in other ways. Other ways. Now, in the early days, what you had was dirty people that were coughing into these open buckets. So, you know, milking machines certainly do eliminate people coughing and blowing their nose and wiping it on their pants and then milking the cow. Or you can have conscientious people who keep themselves clean, don't cough in the bucket, and milk the cows with the intent that I'm going to drink this milk. I'm going to be feeding this milk to other people. Now, when you get into an industrial environment, what do we care? You know, the Ford worker puts the tire and the wheel on the car. He doesn't care if it's put on right or wrong or good or bad or whatever. You know, he does it because that's his job. When you do a job like that, you say to yourself, well, gee, my family is riding on this wheel. I want to make sure this wheel is on here. The worker in the factory, you know, he's putting the wheel on because it's his rote job, not because he's concerned about the health, safety, or welfare of the people that are driving the car. I say that's a big difference. The guy producing the milk who's concerned about the health, safety, and welfare of the people drinking the milk is going to be a whole lot more careful about the way he produces that milk than some guy that's working in a dairy who's just putting in his 8 hours, collecting his paycheck and going about his business. He doesn't drink milk anywhere. He drinks Jack Daniels or Budweiser beer. He doesn't drink milk. So tuck that one away in your hearts, boys and girls. When God designed milk, he designed a good product. And we came along and we screwed up the product by, number one, producing dirty milk. And then we decided, well, we'll solve that dirty milk problem, not by cleaning up the milk supply, but by pasteurizing it, which complicated and actually compounded the problem. Now we've created infectious disease for degenerative disease. I don't know which is killing more people, and I don't know which is worse. I say both are bad. I say let's eliminate infectious disease by producing clean milk, and then let's eliminate degenerative disease by drinking raw milk. And listen, for all you people out there that want to drink pasteurized milk, I don't want to get in your way. I want you people out there who want pasteurized milk to have a choice. I just want you zealots out there that drink your pasteurized milk to keep your zealots, your zeal to yourselves, and let me have the same free choice that I'm offering you. You choose your pasteurized milk and let me choose my raw milk, and let me sell my raw milk to people that want to buy raw milk. Is that fair? I know, you're sitting there saying, yeah, but we believe that pasteurized milk is safe and raw milk is dirty and unsafe. Well, I have my beliefs. I believe raw milk is safe when produced in clean circumstances, and pasteurized milk is dangerous. Now, why is your belief any better than mine? Some guy comes along, he says, well, science. No, science shows that raw milk is better for you and safer and healthier for you. I just showed you that. Than is pasteurized milk. Now, what the pasteurized people have going for them is that pasteurized milk eliminates, or virtually eliminates, infectious disease. Well, that's good. And we should eliminate infectious disease. And we can do that by producing clean milk as well as pasteurizing it. But once you've pasteurized that milk, there isn't any way that you're going to prevent degenerative disease. So the guy drinking pasteurized milk is trading infectious disease for degenerative disease, and I'm sitting here saying, I don't want either. I don't want infectious disease, and I don't want degenerative disease. So in order for me to eliminate degenerative disease, I have to drink raw milk. In order for me to eliminate infectious disease, I have to drink clean raw milk. That's a tougher row to hoe, but I'm willing to do that to eliminate disease. The people who are advocating pasteurized milk are advocating degenerative disease rather than infectious disease. And the people that are advocating raw milk over here are advocating clean raw milk. I don't think anybody's advocating dirty milk. Even the pasteurized people, you know, are striving diligently to produce milk just as clean as possible, just as clean as you possibly can out on this feedlot. And I'm sitting there saying, well, I don't think you're going to produce clean milk in a feedlot. I've never seen it done, and I can't imagine how you're going to do that. I can do a better job of producing clean milk if I've got clean cows that are laying down on clean green grass or on clean leaves out in the woods, but not laying in their own manure out in the feedlot. Now, one Friday morning when I was in medical school, now this is Douglas now, a group of 8 farm workers who had been spraying vegetables were brought to the emergency department of the university hospital. They were all dead but one. Now, this one survivor lived only because he had been thrown in the truck upside down. The others died of pulmonary edema, drowning from fluid in their lungs. The one lucky worker drained his lungs spontaneously because of being upside down, so he survived. The chemical that caused this death in these farm workers is known as an organophosphate. You wouldn't want that in your milk now, would you? Well, many dairies are now feeding an organophosphate to their cattle. This chemical, known as Lincophus, ends up in the manure and poisons the larvae of flies. Now, isn't that clever? Why maintain a clean barn when you can just douse your cows with organophosphate and then let the chemically contaminated manure poison the maggots? What does this dosing with chemicals do to the cow and the cow's milk? Well, the FDA says it doesn't do anything. And they've told us that before. Remember DES, swine flu vaccine, and Oraflex? Now, the average commercial dairy farmer is interested primarily in production figures rather than quality. Those farmers who are sincerely concerned about the drastic decline in the quality of milk can do very little about it until the public demands a better product. The farmer sells to a vast consortium and has no control over the final product. At least the final product may look the same as milk from the cow. But biochemically, enzymatically, nutritionally, it's about as close to the real milk as non-dairy creamer is to real cream. You know, non-dairy creamer that you put in your coffee in the restaurant doesn't have any connection with milk. It's a chemical. Just read the ingredients. It's just a concoction of chemicals. Now, I want to point out that when the cow eats vitamin C, vitamin D, and minerals, that those vitamins and minerals come through in her milk. When that cow eats toxic chemicals, those toxic chemicals come through in the milk. That's why when the Russians were exploding bombs, we were getting strontium 90 in our milk supply here in the United States, because that strontium 90 blows all over the world, settles on the grass, cow eats the grass, gets into her body, and is transferred into her milk. Everybody knows that. Now, if strontium 90 isn't good for us, why is organophosphates good for us? Why are these chemicals that are being fed by Monsanto, etc., to our cows, and why is bypass protein that's being fed to these cows good for us, and when chemicals that come from a nuclear power plant or pollution that comes from some other source like acid rain is bad for us? You know, it really just boils down to propaganda. You believe what you hear on the radio and television and reading the papers. And the more propaganda you hear, the more you believe it. That's why Adolf Hitler made an observation one time. He said, you know, you tell a big enough lie often enough to enough people and they'll believe it. You just keep repeating the lie over and over and over again. It's like evolutionary philosophy. You just keep repeating the lies over and over and over again. Pretty soon people believe it. They believe it's scientific. They believe it comes out of the science textbook. The science textbook says it must be true. If it's in print, it's got to be true. Now, the farmer wants pituitary giant freaks that produce their body weight in milk every 10 days. But the milk from these milk-producing superstars may contain excessive amounts of pituitary hormones. The pituitary excretion affecting growth is called the growth hormone. This hormone may account for the fact that each succeeding generation of Americans for the past 50 years has been taller than their parents. This excess height, although associated with handsomeness and health in our culture, may actually be a sign of abnormal pituitary function due to excess pituitary growth hormone from milk. Bigger is not necessarily healthier. The independent dairy farmer producing raw certified milk is interested in quality as well as quantity, and he knows that these abnormal milk producers are prone to be unhealthy and subject to infection, requiring the frequent use of antibiotics. As he doesn't cover mistakes and unsanitary production methods by heat treating the milk, he's more likely to own normal healthy cows producing less milk but without excess pituitary and other hormones. Well, that's exactly correct. My cows don't produce a whole lot of milk, but the milk that's produced is top quality. Our only interest here is quality. We're not interested in how much milk this cow produces. We're interested in what's the quality of the milk. We don't use antibiotics here at all. Some guy said to me one time, what do you do when your cow gets mastitis? We don't have mastitis. We don't use milking machines. You know, mastitis is called milking machine disease in the trade. Milking machine disease. And what happens is that these milking machines are put on one cow after another. And the bacteria that comes from this mastitis is spread to other cows. So that's led to a lot of times the farmer, you know, when he's a dairyman, when he's milking, he'll put the milking machines into disinfectant. You know, for about 2 seconds, they dip it in the disinfectant and then they stick it on the next cow. I milk by hand. I haven't had a case of mastitis in 20 years. Cows milked by hand don't get it. But hey, listen, once in a while you'll get a hard udder. So before it develops into mastitis, as soon as I feel a lump in a cow's bag, I feed her vinegar. The very first sign of mastitis will be a hardening of the artery, or a hardening of the mammary gland. And immediately that tells me that this cow needs vinegar. We need to change her acid alkaline balance. And so you give her a cup of vinegar on top of her grain. Not only will she eat the vinegar and love it, the very next milking, 12 hours later, that mammary gland will be just as soft as it can be. Now that's the way you deal with it. You deal with it with just ordinary foods. I was reading a book the other day by Joel Wallach. He used to work for a big university. And this big university was working with muscular dystrophy. And Wallach, being a veterinarian, decided to do some experiments. And so he did some experiments with muscular dystrophy on some monkeys. And he discovered that muscular dystrophy is a symptom caused by selenium deficiency. selenium deficiency. See, degenerative diseases, you know, like muscular dystrophy and multiple sclerosis and so on, these are degenerative diseases. Degenerative diseases are caused by toxicity or starvation. Infectious diseases will be countermanded by your immune system if your immune system is up to par. But when your immune system becomes weakened, either through toxicity or through starvation, then infectious disease, opportunistic disease, comes in and ravages your body. And we call these symptoms disease. And we have labels we hang on them. And we go to the doctor. You know, the doctor can't cure you. And he tells you that. He says, I don't have any cures here. But I can sure tell you what's wrong with you. So you go to the doctor, and the doctor looks at you, and he says, ah, you're lucky you came in time. You've got cancer. What are you going to do about this cancer? Oh, we can cut it out. Well, can you cure it? I mean, can you give me some foods that would make that cancer go away? Now, if you're going to treat this naturally, the answer is yes. We'll give you vitamin and mineral therapy, and your cancer will go away because your immune system will destroy it. And we'll put black salve on it. The active ingredient in black salve is bloodroot. Yeah, that'll destroy the cancer and won't destroy the surrounding tissue. I mean, there's nine cures for cancer, boys and girls, and don't have anything to do, you know, with technology. It has to do with food and herbs. Food and herbs, you know. But Americans, you know, they want an answer right now. It's like driving through the drive-through window of McDonald's. You know, we got to have instant satisfaction. I want a shot. I want a pill. I want an immune drug here. Health doesn't come from a test tube. Health doesn't come from a pill. It comes from food. This pituitary also stimulates the production of sex hormones. Could this be contributing to the vast array of sexual problems that we see today in our society? Sexual dysfunction has become so common that the medical profession now has a separate journal to deal with it. And so people are running around today, you know, they want Viagra. Hey, listen, boys and girls, I think raw milk would solve your problem a hell of a lot cheaper and easier than Viagra. You know, I'm 66 and I don't have any sexual dysfunction. I don't wear glasses. Don't have a hearing aid. Been drinking probably, I'd say a half a gallon of milk a day every day for the last 25 years and all raw. Hadn't killed me yet. And I'm in pretty good health, you know, for an old fart. Pretty good health. And I think that milk and clean meat and clean living, you know, I don't smoke and I don't drink to excess. And that all probably has little contributing factors that go into it. You know, health isn't something that you get out of a bottle. You know, health is something that you live every day. If you want to smoke, well, that's your choice. I think that everybody that wants to smoke ought to have a choice. They ought to be able to go buy a pack of Camels. I'm not opposed to smoking. Hell, get out there and get after it. I'm not going to smoke. I decided that that's not a very good choice for me, so I'm going to give it up. But I'm not out here trying to throw all you smokers out of the bars and the hotels and the restaurants. And I'm all for free choice. I'd just like to have some of that free choice for me. I'd like to have the free choice to walk into a store and buy a bottle of raw milk. So I know it's a wild new concept, but it's called freedom. Freedom of choice. All right, we're about out of time. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. For more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It's open to individuals by prearrangement, and the law school conducts homeschooling programs for adults on compact disc. For more information, go to that homeschooling page, georgegordon.org. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please go call the law school direct, 417-273-4967. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. All right, we're out of time. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.